Now, I mentioned the fact that in Babylon, every god had his sacred number. Numerology was very prominent both long before and during and following the time of Christ. Starting way back in Babylon, every god had his sacred number. God 1, Aleph, was dedicated to the bull. The word Aleph means bull. That's the Hebrew Chaldee name of the letter A. Aleph means bull. So the first of everything went to the bull god. The first day of every year was dedicated to the bull god, Aleph. The first day of every month was dedicated. The firstborn son of every family was dedicated to the priesthood of this astrological religion revolving around the worship of the heavenly bull and the sun. The first day of every week, the first day of every half month, that's fortnight, the first day of every fortnight, and the first day of every week was dedicated to the sun long before the time of Christ. I have records going 2,000 years back into Egyptian history showing that on the first day of every month, the first day of every half month, and the first day of every week, the people were to come up to the temple and pour out their drink offerings to the dead, because the spirits of the departed were all clustered right in the church, and it was a form of spiritualism, of worship of the dead in the church, and so they buried them right in the church, and they came up and offered their drink offerings to the dead, because according to the Egyptian religion, for instance, you had to give drink offerings to the dead in order to keep them happy. Otherwise, they'd come down and haunt you because they got thirsty down there in the place where they were. So you had to pour out drink offerings very often. So that all went to God 1. Now, each of the gods had his sacred number, but we're not going to be able to discuss that. This is the Babylonian system. By the way, the Greeks took exactly the same sacred numbers and dedicated the same numbers as did the Babylonians to the same gods. Now we have only one mention of a sacred number as such, or as a number as such that I know of in the Bible. I have looked quite carefully, and in no other place in the Bible can I find a number used the way it is here in Revelation 13. And that no man might buy nor sell save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. There's a positive statement that this number applies to the beast. And I know that I was very interested in this word for, because in my research, until I'd gone back and studied this text a little bit, in my research it was always the number of the beast, not the number of a man at all. It was the number of Satan. It was the number of the sun god. The number 666 was consecrated by the Babylonians to the Aleph, the bull god, the sun god. And I'll show you the references in here to prove it. Long before the time of Christ. Budge, for instance, calls attention to the fact that these sacred numbers from 1 to 36, whose total of sum is 666, that these were popular, these amulets, before the time of Christ. And I must tell you why these amulets were used. Now, the ancients believed that all the evil that came to us was the result of the heavenly deities, the sun, moon, and stars. But intimately connected with these heavenly deities were the souls of the departed. They taught that all the souls of the departed went to the stars, to the sun and the moon. And so that the human life was a little divine spark, same as the Rosicrucians teach, and that at death the little spark goes back to the divine God. And so the whole system then revolves around the worship of the dead and the worship of the sun, moon, and stars. And we learned this morning that it's only camouflaged devil worship, because the sun god was represented as the father of all the gods. The ancients called the other stars flesh of his flesh, emanations of the sun, because they said the sun is a big fire god and these others are little fire gods, so these are the sons and the daughters of the sun god. So it all revolved around the sun. Now, Plutarch wrote the same time John the Revelator did. And he says that when the ancients wanted to swear by anything, they swore by the number 36. Because, he says, the number 36 was the most sacred oath that could be taken. And I was interested in that because it so happens that the Babylonians divided the 12 houses of the zodiac into 36 rooms. Now, the zodiac is just a little narrow band. I must give you this foundation for the number, then I'm going to show you the actual use of it here in a moment. The zodiac is just a little narrow band. It's 9 degrees on each side of the sun. The sun goes right through the center of the zodiac. As you see the sun travel across the sky, you'd mark out that same path at night where the sun travels during the day. That would be your zodiac. The circle of the zodiac is divided into 12 houses, and every 2 hours, a new sign of the zodiac comes above the horizon in the east. A good astronomer can go out and look on the eastern heavens and tell you within a few minutes of what time it is, any time of the night, by seeing what stars have come over the horizon and which sign of the zodiac has just come up at that time. Now, the Babylonians not only divided the zodiac into 12 houses, they divided each house into 3 rooms, then making 36 rooms in the circle of the zodiac. All the other ancient peoples of the ancient world took this same 36 division. Then they divided the remainder of the sky outside of the zodiac into 36 constellations, and they appointed the god of each constellation to rule over one of these 36 rooms. So when you were concentrating on the zodiac, you were in the zodiac was centered, in other words, the whole system of Babylonian astrology. And since there were 36 rooms in the entire circle of the heavens, do you see that why by swearing by the number 36, you would be swearing by all the spirits of all the ancestors that had ever gone to dwell in the stars, and also you were swearing by all the gods of heaven. They considered that fire was the earthly representative of the sun god, and so it was all revolved around this worship of the sun. Now, the sun goes right through the center. The other 6 planets stay within the zodiacal band. This little band, 18 degrees wide, 9 degrees on each side of the sun, the 7 planets stay in that band, but they wander back and forth across the path of the sun. They're called, the word planet means wanderer. And so they wander back and forth, and they were represented as 7 serpents, the sun being one of them, the sun going through the center, and the other 6 crisscrossing back and forth. They were represented as the 7 serpents, or as a 7-headed serpent. And to my amazement, I discovered, even on the ancient Babylonian cylinder seals, the 7 planets worshipped as a 7-headed serpent, or a 7-headed dragon. So here's your evil god himself, this giant 7-headed serpent that serpentines his way through the center of the zodiac, ruling over all the other 36 divisions of the zodiac and the 36 constellations of the sky. All are centered upon this, and all the evil, all the misfortune, all the disease that came to man was supposed to come from these 36 divisions. So when Plutarch says that when they wanted to swear by anything, they swore by the number 36, which was the most solemn oath that could be taken, they were swearing by all the gods with this number 36. Now, long before the time of Christ, hundreds and hundreds of years before the time of Christ, these pagan gods gave, these pagan philosophers gave certain summary numbers to the gods. Pythagoras, 400 years before the time of Christ, says, "What thou thinkest 4 is 10. Now, how do you get 4 and 10 with any relation to each other? Well, you'd add the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 together, and you get 10. So he says 4 really means 10, because the numbers from 1 to 4 are added together. So they considered any god which was represented by the number of 10 would be also representative of the 4 directions of space and everything else that was connected with the number 4, which is one of their sacred numbers. By the way, some of their numbers have a fairly sensible reason. They dedicated number 30 to the moon goddess, because the moon has a monthly period. So the number 30 was dedicated to the mother deity of the sky and considered as the wife of the sun. The number 60 was dedicated to Pluto, the lord of hell, and to the sun also. And before we get through, we'll find out how many other numbers were dedicated to this one god. So there was some basis in their mind for sacred numbers, but these summary numbers were especially valuable because any god who was represented by a summary number, that god was considered as the ruler over all the other gods. Now, it just so happens that the numbers from 1 to 36 added together equal 666. And so the number 666 was considered as the grand number of the sun, or the sun god is the ruler of cosmos, or the whole circle of the heavens. The cosmos was the Greek term for the god who ruled the whole circle of the heavens. Catholicus was the Roman name for the same god, and formerly the word Catholicus had purely an astrological connotation, had nothing whatsoever to do with its present connotation. It referred to the god who ruled the whole circle of the heavens. Now, the sun god is pictured in many, many, many ancient texts as seated on the circle of the zodiac, as the ruler of the zodiac. Well, why not? Because the sun circles through the zodiac. The sun goes through the circle of the zodiac once each year. The moon goes through the circle of the zodiac once each month. Venus and Mercury go through in a certain length of time, and Saturn, Old Father Time, takes him 29 years to make the circle of the zodiac, but he finally gets there, 29 and a half years. And so these planets, serpentining their way back and forth, are represented as a seven-headed dragon. I submit to you that this, since this whole system represented Satan, and this seven-headed dragon was a sort of a summary of the whole thing, that there's quite a bit of an explanation of why the devil is represented as a seven-headed dragon, and the woman who sits upon this seven-headed dragon is the woman who has mystery, Babylon the Great, and so far is written on her forehead. Now, you folks believe you know who that woman represents. Might I tell you that the seven hills of Rome were formerly named after the seven planets, and that the Bible itself says that the seven heads upon which this woman sits are seven mountains? Well, the seven hills of Rome are formerly named after the seven planets. And furthermore, the Pope of Rome during the medieval ages was commonly and very frequently represented by churches, by books printed in Rome, as the god ruling over the circle of the zodiac. He is shown seated on the zodiac. In the book Die Fortuna, printed by Pope Clement VII in 1526, that's Martin Luther's Pope, the Pope is shown seated on the circle of the zodiac as the ruler of the zodiac. So the ruler of the zodiac had the number 666. Now you see the connection. And by the way, in this text here, it says, I told you that I ran onto the evidence that it was the number of the beast, the number of the sun god, the seven-headed dragon, and that I thought it represented a man, and so I couldn't get the two to go together, so I just threw the evidence out for years. But I read this text again. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, and it says four, it is the number of a man. And I looked up this word four, and it's the Greek word gar, which means and also and four. It has three meanings, and, also, or four. Let's take one of those other meanings. And it is the number of a man. It's the number of the beast, and it's the number of a man. It's the number of the beast, also it is the number of a man. You see, you get those other readings into it, and then I saw, well, now maybe this whole system is all put together. And when I began to find pictures of the Pope shown seated on the zodiac, in fact, up until comparatively modern times, during the medieval period, the zodiac was carved on the papal throne. Now, the ruler of the zodiac was called Catholicus in Rome, and Cosmos in Greek, and that was the god that in paganism had the number 666. So these things begin to have a little more meaning to me. If you will turn in the manuscript to page 2, you'll see these solar seals, these amulets. Now they taught that if you don't have one of these papers, if you will try to sit near somebody, will you please share, and as far as possible get these papers so that everyone can see, or kind of pass them back and forth. These are amulets that are worn by pagans to ward off evil. Now, why would anyone wear on his person the numbers from 1 to 36? Now, these are in modern characters now, but these old symbols, they've been translated. Originally, these characters had the original letters of the alphabet. In fact, the one over at the left-hand side in figure 2 has the Greek, the Hebrew Chaldee alphabet in the numbers from 1 to 36 written there, just the same as it is on these other amulets. That's the way they were originally. Later, they came to be written with modern numbers during the medieval period in late times. Now, why would anyone wear upon his person the numbers from 1 to 36 with the sun god sitting on one side? Well, I'll tell you why. The ancients taught that if you had on your person any symbol referring to the god that you worshipped, devil, that the devil would come and see his symbol on your person. By wearing that symbol, you would show you were one of his subjects, and the devil, according to ancient theology, never would attack anyone upon which he found his symbol. Might I say that that's where we get our wearing of gold and silver and the rest of those things? Babylonian texts say, holy gold thou shalt take. And silver was sacred to the moon. Gold was sacred to the sun. In fact, gold was considered as condensed sunshine. I suppose silver was condensed moonshine. But these metals were sacred. The diamond, the topaz, and the crystal, the flesh of the gods are they. Because the sparkle of light, you had the god right on your presence. And King Tut had 143 pieces of sacred jewelry upon his person. And every one of those jewels, we're told by the scholars, by Carter, who directed in the exhumation of King Tut, every one of those jewels had a sacred function to perform in protecting the body. So that's your basis of all of this, is to get something on your person that would show that you are a subject of that God, that you worship him, that you're one of his admirers, and therefore he's not supposed to attack you. And that's why they have the numbers from 1 to 36. Now, it isn't by chance that we have 12 inches in our yardstick. The 12 inches represent the 12 signs of the zodiac. It isn't by chance that we have 12 men in a jury. Anciently, each member of the jury had to be born under a different sign of the zodiac so that his judgment would be absolutely flawless, that the whole wisdom of the whole circle of the heavens were supposed to be involved in these 12 men. It isn't by chance that there are 36 inches in a yardstick, nor is it by chance that there are 36 inches in all astrological, 36 number divisions of all astrological wheels all over the world. Any of you go over to visit Reno sometimes, tell them there are 36 number divisions. And there are, on our American wheels, there are 2 zero divisions. It isn't just by chance, because it's easy to divide a circle into 36 divisions. There are 36 divisions there. Actually, there's a couple of zero divisions on our American wheels, and on the wheels over in Europe, there's 1 zero division, making 37 over there, 38 here. Now, those zero divisions over there, I don't know why we got 2 here, but over there, the zero division stands for the 5 days, or the 6 days, as the case may be, beyond the 360 days of the year. They had to allow for those 5 days, too. But that circle of that zodiac represents the 365 days of the year, or the 360 days of the old year. There's a lot of evidence to prove that the year before the time of the flood was 360 days long, but we won't go into that today. But this represented the circle of the year and all the gods of the year, and so you were consulting the astrologers, really, when you spun the roulette wheel. And there are a large number of other things. By the way, how many cards are there in a deck of cards? 52. 52 weeks in the year. How many numbered cards are there in a deck of cards? 36. For the 36 divisions of the Babylonian zodiac. How many kings, queens, and knaves, or whatever it is it? There are 12 of them, representing the 12 signs of the zodiac. And there are a lot of other astrological things connected with the cards. What do they use for fortune-telling cards? Why? Because they're all astrological. They go back to the religion of Babylon. All right, if you turn to page 2 now of this, you'll find some of these amulets with the 36 constellations of the sky laid out in a 6x6 square, with the numbers from 36, which if added in any direction, will give you 111 for each column. You can add across this way, you can add up and down. These are magic squares. They're so laid out, they must have figured to do that. They're laid out so that no matter which way you add them, they come out 111, and since there are 6 columns, the grand total is 666, the grand number of the sun. Notice that the sun god is a solar lion. By the way, why does the lion represent the sun? Well, they said at first that his fringe of hair, his mane of hair, represented the rays of the sun, but that's not the main reason, because the sun god represented Lucifer, and the lion was considered as the type of the individual, or the type of the being that sneaked up and pounced on his prey. It's a symbol of the destroyer. How does the devil go about? As a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And so your solar lion goes all through these. Figure 9, we have the 6x6 square with Sol, the sun god. Sol is a Latin. So this is a Latin amulet here. And they wore that on their person now so that they might be protected from all the evils that could come from the whole circle of the heavens where their ancestors were. And by the way, there are a lot of bad people in this world, and they thought that when the bad people died, their spirits were still bad. And you should read some of those ancient texts. When those poor people that were afflicted with disease and they were tormented with misfortune, they'd come up to the priest and say, "What can I do? What can I do? I'm in misery." And the priest would tell them, "That's because your wife thinks you were stepping out on her once upon a time, and that's why she's the one that's coming and afflicting you." You ought to read some of the prayers that those poor people addressed to the spirits of the departed, pleading with them, "Oh, I never did this. I've been faithful to you. I love all during these years. Please don't come down and afflict me anymore." See, spiritualism, all mixed up with that. And by the way, did the teaching that the souls of the departed go to the stars, did that stop with Babylon? How many of you ever read the book entitled That Book in the Attic? Good. The little girl that wrote that book, when she used to go out and look up at the heavens, and she looked up at the stars and wondered which one of the stars contained the spirit of her little dead brother. What church did she come from? Catholicism. They still teach the same thing. That the souls of the departed go to the stars. That's the old Babylonian teaching. So figure 9, we have the solar lion. Figure 10, we have the solar lion also, the sun god as the lion. Notice what the solar lion has in his paw in figure 10. This is Heloi, that's Helios. That's the Greek word for the sun god there. He has a ring in his paw. Do you see the ring there, the circle? You know what that symbolizes? The destroyer as the ruler of the circle, the ruler of the circle of the heavens. In fact, the circle is always represented in pagan theology, the whole cosmic god, the whole universe deified. And over in Mesopotamia to this day, there's a group of people that are called the Yezidis, Y-E-Z-I-D-I-S, the Yezidis. They're open devil worshippers. They say there's no object in worshipping a good god. The object of worship is to placate and appease the evil one. And that is the basis for all paganism. And that's the basis of this whole system of apostasy, is to try to get on the side of Satan by worshipping him. And they're very superstitious about the circle. And little heathen boys, according to these Yezidis, just love to play tricks on these Yezidis. They believe that a circle is so sacred that you don't dare break it or step over it because you offend the cosmic god when you do that. And if they catch these little boys that know these Yezidis, if they catch them looking up at the sky at an airplane or something, it's one of their favorite tricks to run right quick and put a circle around them right quick and draw a circle around them. And those poor people have been known to stand for hours in the hot sun pleading with people that come along the street to break that circle so that they can get out because they don't believe they can step over it. They're open devil worshippers. They say the object of worship is to placate and appease the evil one. Now, those of you who are here that weren't here this morning, perhaps you recall that Satan is the god of all paganism, that all pagan gods are only camouflaged gods. I find Babylonian texts, in fact, all the ancient theologians, the leading theologians of all nations, say without exception that all of our gods represent one god. Over in India to this day, the great citadel of paganism and idolatry, do you know what their texts say over there? One of the Hindu scriptures say, how many gods are there? 3 and 300, 3 and 3,000. Who are the 3 and 300, 3 and 3,000? They are only forms of the one. Now, we're trying in this study to strip aside the camouflage and to show Satan for what he really is, as the god of this world, the god who has all paganism behind him and all apostasy, which takes in the very doctrines and appendages of demon worship and brings them into the church. That is what we're aiming at. Well, that's why then we have these seals of the sun. They wore these upon their person in the hope that they might escape the anger and the misfortune that would come from this cosmic god, the whole god of the sky. Now, notice that two of these amulets on page 2 have the number, perhaps three or four of them. There's at least three that have the number 666 on them. Figure 11, there's one. See the number 666 down at the bottom of it. And figure 8 also has the number 666 on it. Over at the side, we have that the sun has the number 636, 111, and 666. 5/10 of the way down on the left-hand side, that there's a Latin inscription in which the sun god has the numbers 636, 111, and 666. Those were numbers that are dedicated to the sun. Turning over, please, to page 3. We have here a version of the scriptures in which we have the number of this beast is 666. Notice that it's written thus. That's the way the Greeks, one of the ways the Greeks would write the number 666. They use the letters of their alphabet. The first letter here is chi, which stands for 600. The second letter is chi, which stood for 60. And the third letter is the stigma, the old sixth letter of the old Greek alphabet, which stood for the number 6. Now, I was very interested in the study of this stigma, which was dropped from the Greek alphabet, permitting the zeta, the seventh letter, to drop back into sixth position and stand for the number 6. As we see on this page, we perhaps won't take time to go into that. But the Greeks used the stigma for the number 6. They used the stigma for the number 6. Now, I discovered something interesting about this letter. The sixth letter of all alphabets, it seems almost without exception, stood for the serpent. This shape of this letter represents the cobra coming out to attack. The sound of the letter represents the hiss of the cobra. And our own number 6 represents the cobra, which rises from its coil. And when it rises from its coil, when it becomes first alerted, I have pictures from Dittmeyer's reptiles, having no relation to this study whatsoever. And many of those cobras, you take a picture of them, and they're exactly in the form of this 6. What is the 6th letter of our own alphabet? A, B, C, D, E, F. Look up in Funk and Wagnall's New Standard Encyclopedia. Under the letter F, Our letter F is the descendant of a serpent hieroglyph. The sixth letter of all alphabets was dedicated to the serpent. Now, what numbers were consecrated to the sun? 6, 111, 36, and 666. This is one of the numbers consecrated to the sun, the number 6. This was a symbol of the serpent. Furthermore, in Syriac, the letter O was consecrated to the serpent. Was their symbol for the number 6. The cobra has three very distinct markings on its hood. It has the V, it has a U, sometimes just as distinct as any U you ever saw in your life, sometimes like this even, and it has the letter O. Now those are natural markings on the hood of the cobra. You look in Dittmeyer's Reptiles, and these markings, this O sometimes is just as perfectly drawn on the cobra's hood as if a painter had put it on there. And these are letters that were used for the number 6 in these ancient alphabets. Now, I discovered to my amazement that the Gnostics were using the number 666 long before I knew that that it ever came in. By the way, the title Vicaris Filii Dei never came in until about 900 A.D. We have no record of that title before that time. Now, if we had to wait for the title alone, and by the way, I think the title is valid, but if we had to wait for the title alone, the Christians would have had to wait for 800 years after the time of Christ before they'd have had any meaning to this text which John the Revelator gave them. The actual evidence shows that the text had immediate validity in warning the Christians from having anything to do with this 666 religion. Now, the reason why I think these titles, such as Vicaris Filii Dei and the other titles that you perhaps have studied here, have a meaning, do you know that beginning with Augustine in the church, Augustine, copying after Philo, the Alexandrian Jew, started figuring out the numerical value of every expression in order to explain Scripture. Augustine was a leading numerologist. Now, this is the way they explained the Scripture. They would take the letters of the alphabet, the letters of the person's name, and they would figure up the numerical value of those letters, and supposing the name Christ came out to 34, and then they would go through the Bible and find any other name in the Bible that added up to 34, and pronto, those two names are synonymous because they have the same numerical value. And they would take one text of Scripture here, and if the number, total of this text of Scripture added up to 432, any other text in the Scripture that added up to 432 was considered synonymous with this other one. Now, I can tell you this, that the only value that I've ever been able to find in the system, and it still has a good many modern followers also, but the only value I've ever been able to find is that it taught the people to add. At least they learned how to add, but I can't find any other value. But that was their system of explaining Scriptures. And during the medieval period, the church constantly referred to the numerical value of names and the numerical value of the text in order to explain a mystic secret meaning that was supposed to be in those texts. But here's a word that adds up to so much, and there's another word, therefore these are synonyms. And this name over here is a secret reference to this other name over here because they have the same numerical value. That was the way they explained Scripture. Therefore, I think at the time that such titles as Vicaris Filii Dei came into existence, that those men knew the numerical value and they knew what they were doing. However, we have much stronger evidence than that. Turn to page 4. Now, these Gnostics, as I say, were before the time of Christ. They united Judaism with paganism, and then when Christianity came along, they united Christianity in with the other three. They identified Christ with the serpent. They identified Christ with the sun. They worshiped the number 6. They have found over in Lebanon Gnostic silver inscriptions engraved to the god Wow, W-A-W. The god Wow is the Hebrew Chaldee word for the number 6, the sixth god. And the Egyptians had the priests who had the title Master of the Secret Words of the Six. And they had all kinds of mysteries connected with the number 6. Some of the so-called early church fathers wrote entire themes on the marvelous properties of the number 6. They were writing about the serpent. In fact, the number is so closely connected with the serpent. By the way, some of these serpents on page 4, notice that they're coiled in the form of the figure 6. Now, the down near the bottom of the page, there's an actual picture of a cobra from Dittmeyer's Reptiles with the letter V on his hood, letter U rather, and this serpent is coiled in the form of what later became our number 6. So the hiss, the shape of the letter, the letter Z dropped back into sixth position and stood for the number 6 and 7 after the stigma was dropped, and that gave us our expression, he's at sixes and sevens. How many of you ever heard that expression? He's at sixes and sevens. Do you know what it means? He's confused. Why? Because 6 and 7 were constantly confused. The scholars today are simply mystified, and they can't understand why 6 was dropped out of the numerical system, the symbol for the number 6, and why the Zeta, represented both 6 and 7 in the Chaldee system, and they can't understand that because it's just a mystery. And so at 6s and 7s came to mean confused. Now I found these Gnostic amulets here with the letters SSS on them. Very distinct SSS with a line through them. Now these, as I tell you, were very popular around the time of Christ and following the time of Christ. Well, if the SSS God, and notice that it's with a serpent, and the serpent often is coiled in the form of a 6. Look at the first one to the right of this alphabet there, where we have the 6 in the old Greek numerical system standing for, represented by the letter S. Notice that the serpent coiled in the form of the 6. Notice he has 7 rays on his head. Notice he has a lion head. Here's the serpent, and the lion combined as a symbol of the destroyer. Notice the 7 rays on his head. Do you know what the 7 rays represent? The 7 planets. So here's your old destroying god, the god that crawls through the circle of the zodiac, the 7-rayed god. The ancients speak of that over and over again, coiled in the form of 6, with SSS on the amulet. Now, SSS is the Greek way of writing, one of the Greek ways of writing 666. Now, I wondered, well, maybe they meant 18 by this. And I looked up and I found out, no, that before the time of Christ, the Greeks were using this first one here to represent 600. In other words, they knew the place value before the time of Christ. The first one would represent 600, the second one would represent 60, and the third one would represent 6, just as they do when we write 666. So the place value was known and used before the time of Christ. The Bible writer, according to some of the versions, wrote it this way, 660 and 6. There was no chance of misreading that. This is what the pagans were using, these Gnostics, who combined all of this system into one. Now, when I found that SSS, and then I found in a work on Greek coins and how to read dates on them, I found that the letter S stood for 6. I tell you, I became suddenly interested, particularly when I began to understand this whole system. Here's SSS or 666. Now, the ancients sometimes would write a figure, and it would spell a word. They might write the word a certain figure, and it might spell cat. And so you'd be reading along, you'd read it as cat. And then you discover, well, something kind of funny about this sentence. And then you'd go, oh, I guess he must have meant that as a number. So they had a standard way of designating, you read this as a number. And they drew the line over or under or through the letters to designate, read this as a number. And so here we have Gnostics writing SSS with a line through it. They say right straight off, you read this as a number. Now, do you have to be a great mathematician or a deep scholar to read 666 in this amulet? Here is the number of the cosmic god that ruled the circle of the zodiac. And you find several of them here on this page. Going over to the next page, page 5, we'll run along over these quite quickly. Here is a Catholic picture taken from an authorized Catholic book. I have found these three little symbols many, many times. I didn't know what they meant for a long time. If you look right below this little figure in the middle of this sun, by the way, this sun is called the monstrance. It is in this sun that the host is placed before being held up for the audience to adore it when they have the sacrifice of the Mass. In the middle of this vessel, a vessel with a handle on it, and they call it a sun, and even in their English literature. In French, it's called the soleil, the sun. The word soleil, incidentally, is S-O-L-E-I-L, soleil. That means the sole god or the one god. That's the very meaning of the soleil, the one god. The Latin word is soul, and the Latin writers say that the word soul referred to the one god, the sun god, who ruled over all the other gods. So this vessel is called a soleil, and in this vessel they place the host at the sacrifice of every Mass and hold it up for the people to adore, and they call it a sun. So here we have, then, three little commas and a shin. That little thing at the bottom, which looks like this, is the Egyptian symbol and also the Babylonian symbol. The Babylonian gods often hold this symbol in their hands. Like that. That is the Babylonian symbol of the rod and the circle. It's a double symbol, and it means the Lord, the God, as the ruler of the circle of the heavens. That's the little Shen. Well, here it is, right below the picture there. And then there are three commas, very distinct commas, just above this little Shen. I thought, well, the commas are kind of interesting. Then I began to look through Catholic books, and I find them frequently referred to, the use of three commas with some mystic meaning. I find them on the blessing hand. There are three forms of the blessing hand. Sometimes they use one finger. Sometimes they use three fingers. Sometimes they use two fingers and a thumb. I was amazed to learn that this symbol, according to Oriental scholars, that for some strange reason, the number 666 is connected with the trident sign in India. And then I was amazed to discover that the finger and thumb raised like this is the Hindu trident sign. And on the next page over here, in just a second, I'll show you Hindu god after Hindu god raising the blessing hand exactly the way the Pope raised it today. Now, these things wouldn't mean so much if the Catholic Church didn't tell us that we took in the very instruments and appendages of demon worship and sanctified them by adopting them. Cardinal Newman, Development of Christian Doctrine, page 372. So these things do have a meaning. And when they hold up this blessing hand with the number 666 on it, whichever way they make it, it has a meaning. Three commas. Well, I thought, well, now if they use the comma, there must be some place where this has a meaning. And so I started studying all ancient numerical systems. And I found the Persian numerical system, taken from a book not on the subject of 666, on the subject of ancient alphabets and numerical systems. Here's the Persian alphabet. Look down the third letter from the bottom, the vowel. The Hebrew Chaldee name for that is the vowel. The Persian name for this letter is the vowel. And what does it look like? And what does it stand for? The number six. Do you see it there? The comma, right down the third one from the bottom in the Persian alphabet there. See the little comma, the wow, and over at the right it says the numerical value, and there's your number six. The Arabic, this is the next to the last one in the Arabic. By the way, originally the Arabic alphabet and the Persian alphabet was the same as the Babylonian, in which this letter was up to sixth letter. These letters were later rearranged, but they still carried their old numerical value. And so the comma in Persian, in Arabic, in Afghan, in Turkish, and in several other alphabets, the comma is the symbol for the number six. Furthermore, the Greek name for the comma is upostigma. Now, the stigma is the name of this letter here, the name of the old sixth letter of the Greek alphabet, stigma.